Hey, this is Scott Galloway, author, professor, entrepreneur, and most importantly, host of the Prop G podcast. We got a special series running on right now called The Future of Work, where I answer all your questions on, surprise, the future of work. Questions including, what are we missing when we work remotely? Or how do we handle work-life balance when a major opportunity comes knocking? From the provocative to the technical, we're offering insights you won't want to miss. So tune in to The Future of Work, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Canva. You can find it on the Prop G Pod wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back. It's episode 60 of Eurobash, and we are on Dublin's south side at Clement and Pico. I'm joined, as always, by the lovely Niall McGrath, and we have a hell of a lot of MMA to get through, including Cage Warriors 110, UFC Moscow, KSW 51, several other things. And we have a whole inside MMA beef to talk about. We have an update from Emma at some point. We've also got to talk about Paddy Hoolan's tremendous book launch.
And but I pressed record all, this one.
Oh, thanks very much. Thanks very much. That's very important. I tried to point out halfway through the first segment of this that we were not actually recording it. Noel looked at me, looked at 50 heads, shaked it off, kept going. But look, it only was 20 minutes of our time. Who cares? How are you, Noel? I believe last night you were woken up a lot because you thought a burglar, or essentially somebody with ill intent, was just doing knickknacks on your door.
Man, my fucking doorbell was going off all night, all day yesterday and Saturday, like at random times, like 4:30, 5:30 this morning. So hence, that's why I didn't push the button there at the start, because my brain's a bit wet this morning because I've had about an hour's kip. But
won't last a second on the north side.
But the thing is, we actually think it was maybe a technical fault at the end of the day, which is quite...
I'm imagining your neighbour is watching you smashing through a fucking gate with a golf club in your hand, in your pants, screaming at 5 o'clock in the morning, and they're like, Noel's a troubled young man, isn't he?
I'd imagine so. But listen, what a weekend of mixed martial arts, PT. How was Kenny Cork?
Amazing. It was like the old days all over again. To see the regional scene really thriving like that, to see an atmosphere like there is in Cork. The Cork fans are amazing. Also to see Reese McKee, John McColligan, Ian Gary, John Mitchell, this next crop of potential UFC talent. It's an excitement that we needed. It's something that we've been missing, we've been yearning for. Like, I feel like people don't even know what regional MMA is in Ireland anymore, because they think that all these shows need to be in the Tree Arena. That's the way it is, a bit gritty, a bit dirty. That's the way I like it. And seeing real fights, like, you know, with real stakes. Like, you know, I think if I had one criticism of Bellator, which I've talked about a lot, it's that the events, there's no continuation from events. You just live and die on one night. Here's a few fights.
It doesn't mean anything, as you said to me earlier.
You don't know what they're fighting for, essentially, but with Cage Warriors, you always know what they're fighting for. They're fighting for that gold belt so they can go to the UFC, and it's always about building them up there. And only, as we saw this year so far, I think 4 or 5 maybe signed, only a few ever go through, and that's what makes it really interesting. And That's why I really liked it.
It did, even on the broadcast, you know, watching at home, it felt as though something special was happening. You know, you had Ian Gary, you had, you know, Reese, you had Joe McColgan, 3 big wins, you know, Irish guys all over the place, littered there in the pro scene, guys who were able to get fights, and it did. It felt special, it felt small, it felt intimate, and it felt like the old days, as I said to you, back in the Helix, on a very, very special night. I think it's hugely important the Cage Warriors are back in this market, because it gives guys that aren't affiliated or signed to Bellator an option to get a pro fight. Massively crucial for Ireland.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no, it was brilliant. I'm pumped. Like, I'm very, very excited. Let's go on with the latest news, because we're going to be talking about this anyway. Jairzinho Rozenstruik replaces Walt Harris. He's going to fight Overeem in DC this month. Danilo Belguardo, Azamat Mirzakhanov, all cut from the UFC. Darren Till opens up as 5th in the middleweight rankings. Robert Whittaker has declared interest in facing the Liverpoolian in London. Anton Rakic is the first KSW bantamweight champion. Tim Barnett replaces Tom Green. He'll face Akon Wanless at Bellator London. Alessandro Botto replaces Miles Price. He's going to take on Alfie Davis at London. James Haskell, a man who said he will have a professional dedication to MMA just 2 months ago, has been leaked and will be a cast member on I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here.
Oh, Jesus.
Doesn't really seem professionally dedicated to me with that kind of stuff, but Graham Boylan also announced 3 dates in Ireland for next year, May 16th and September 26th in Belfast and July 25th in Cork. So that is all our bleeding headlines. But great stuff to see Cage Warriors using the momentum created in Cork and to push out those three events. We already see the stars that are McKee, McColgan, obviously Gary, John Mitchell down in Cork. It feels very exciting. And the fact that they released this event, it kind of keeps that momentum going, right?
Of course, man. We talk about it in mixed martial arts inside the cage. And I think it's just as crucial outside the cage at times to keep that momentum going for promotions. The eyes are on them now here. And to kick on in 2020 with three massive shows like that is an absolute no-brainer. And it's great that they're back, as I said, and producing more stars. And I believe it's only a couple of fights away before we see Mr. Reese McKee possibly in the UFC if he does go on and get that title shot against Ross Houston, which he's already called for. So I think it's a no-brainer for Belfast to headline Reese McKee, him to sit out and maybe wait on May till that card. More eyes on him and more eyes on Cage Warriors. No-brainer.
We're going to be talking about Cage Warriors a lot more in the second part of the show, where we break down what happened the week before. But it really was a home run. Like, I mean, I can't Absolutely. Think, like, I never thought that it would be, like, I thought it would be big, but I didn't think it was going to be that big. I mean, the traction totally it has online.
Online traction was insane. Unbelievable, man. Like, yeah. From Reese especially, I noticed, that went up. It's just like Reese has this aura about him. We've talked about it before. It's sort of like what Conor had maybe back early in the day to a certain extent. He says something like Darren Till, and you generally trying to believe him. He has this sort of presence about him. And, you know,
unbelievable ability, first and foremost, I feel, Reese.
Unbelievable, man. And he looks like a middleweight, to be honest, you know, as well. Huge. We'll be talking about that, I think, in a couple of years. I wouldn't be even surprised if he went to 185. The guy is just massive. But, yeah, momentum is there with Cage Warriors, as I said. But, man, look at, you even know the online traction, as you just said there. It was crazy for all the lads in the night. And there was a real excitement and buzz. And maybe because there hasn't been a Cage Warriors card in 2 years. You know, the starvation of that sort of intimate atmosphere and stuff really got people excited. And I was thoroughly buzzing after that fight card, man.
It's like, it feels like the old days, like when we were going around to these events. And I'm going to, like, if fans, media guys, whatever, like, you need to get on this because it's the most Deadly. Exciting part Deadly. Of the whole thing. Like, watching these guys going with them all the way through until they get to that stage, it's unbelievable. And this is happening in Ireland now. Really, really amazing. Even when I was, like, looking around, I was like, this feels so much like the old time. Unfortunately, you weren't there.
I know that.
Nobody really was there that we... You know, that we made that a first ascent to the UFC with. Sean was at, like, I remember at the Carl Pendred and Shane Mills fight back in the day, but it's mad seeing four people from Severe MMA there, and you know what I mean? Like, that used to be the old crew. It was crazy. Great to see Andy and the two Sheehans and Porrig Foran there. It's great, man. Just a real buzz in the place. And it's been a long time since that kind of excitement's been on this scene.
I won't be missing the next one. You better back your bottom dollar, whatever that saying is. Not a hope, but... just couldn't make it out for this one. But yeah, no, listen, it came across in the broadcast. You could see, I think when Reese won as well, he ran over to one of his mates in the crowd. It's that sort of thing, you know, going over and hug your boys. But great night. And, you know, I'm very excited for 2020 with Cage Warriors.
Yeah, we had a lot of shit going on, like, which I think actually helped
the event. The car,
yeah, man. I mean, let's just start. Let me just do this chronologically. Paddy Houlihan released his book Hooligan last week. He was on the show, of course. It's been huge, right? Have you seen the amount of books going out, people talking about the books, etc.? It's incredible traction he has as well.
Yeah, unreal, man. Everyone's been covering it. He's been all over every sort of broadcaster here in this country. And, you know, we saw, obviously, Tom put out some of the quotes from the book. And, you know, it really has taken a new life in terms of the interest. And I think he was on with the great... Pat Kenny as well there, and you know, just everywhere, shows you wouldn't expect to see Paddy on. He's been on, and fair play to him. I'm very much looking forward to reading. I know you've read it, and it seems like a fascinating read.
It's brilliant. No, it's amazing. Like, it's everyone that's reading is saying the same thing. Like, it's like some, you can't believe it. Like, it's outrageous. Like, it's really, really good. But obviously Paddy made some comments about John. This is something that was hinted at for a long time. Since he was elected at South Dublin County Council, we spoke to him on the show. We released the article on MMAfighting.com. Off the Ball also had an article out about this situation. This stirs up a lot of kind of interest among the fans and stuff because Paddy was so synonymous with SBG's ascent.
Yeah.
And then Team KF's Tom King, John's first Irish black belt, comes out and starts describing the process by which he left SBG and became Team KF. It got really, really, like, he went in detail about and put out a time frame of what happened. And obviously then we saw Aisling Daly, another person synonymous with the SBG banner, coming out and saying, you know, she felt marginalised there. Then Joey Breslin came out and he said, obviously Joey trains with Paddy already, but I mean Joey would have been a huge part of their jiu-jitsu team, etc. And for him to come out and talk like that, it's like, it's pretty crazy, right? Seeing this mass exodus nearly, even though it's already happened.
Yeah, it's not surprising though. I think, you know, it's sort of been, you know, Paddy so well spoke about it in his podcast a couple of months ago with Tom King on the No Shame podcast, that they basically had a relationship breakdown with John Kavanagh, the two of them.
Remember when he was on our show and he said that too?
Yeah. No, I'm just saying. He confirmed it back then. So it's really not surprising for me. I think there's been a lot of rumblings, maybe that some people aren't aware of in the public eye, that we've heard about, and they've really just come to the surface. And theoretically, the shit has hit the fan, and that's why they're sort of going off on each other. But listen, it is business related, it seems. So, you know, people can fall out through that, and I just think it's a sad fact of life and the way stuff happens. But not good to see really that the Irish scene is. Sort of become a little bit fractured because of this, yes?
Well, yeah, you're right. Like, it is fractured, but it's better that it's out there.
Yeah,
like, I feel like everybody knew this was happening. I was like, the elephant in the room every time. It's like, you're like, just say that you guys have parted ways.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
you know,
definitely.
What I mean? You know, we're going to have Tom on the show, Tom King, to speak about this. He gave us his time. Very grateful for that. We did reach out to John for a comment, but in fairness, John just kind of said, like, this is a personal thing. Like, it's a business
enough.
Issue, and that's fair enough. John did give me an update as far as Emma is concerned, because after Cage Warriors 110, Graham Boylan kind of suggested that he wouldn't work with Emma because John is the president of the body. And he said, you know, that's a conflict of interest. John is a promoter with Euro Fight Night. He's a close ties with Bellator. He's had beef with Graham Boylan online, let's be honest, like, due to their affiliations with Cage Warriors and Bellator. So I can understand where he's coming from. But
there's a lot of heat there.
But John kind of said, like, look, the reason why Emma weren't at Cage Warriors, first of all, and were at the UFC and Bellator, is because the UFC and Bellator offered them to shadow them to see how it self-regulates. So that would have been a learning experience for Emma. Cage Warriors, unsurprisingly, did not afford them the same invitation. You're not all surprised by that, I imagine, Noel?
No, not at all. I think, you know, Graham has said to you a few minutes, you know, Graham, you know, he's put a lot of eyes in this event as well. You know, he says what he wants to say. He goes out, puts it on the line, and people are interested in what Graham has to say, and, you know, he doesn't hold back, and, you know, he is right. And I think, you know, as the lines you have there from John Peatsy, which you'll tell the guys about now in a second, or I can relate a lot to what Graham Boylan is saying, and I agree with a lot of Graham Boylan saying.
Yeah, basically, John kind of said, look, once the safety criteria is being met, and, you know, Cage Warriors have blazed a trail for safe MMA, in fairness to them, over the years. So, I mean, there was never going to be any doubt about them reaching that. So, I mean, he said once that's being respected and adhered to, there's no reason for us to get involved ever. Like, the only reason we were at those events in the past is because we were invited. As far as the conflict of interest, John kind of agreed with Graham. He was like, yeah, no, that will be a problem, you know. So,
of course it will.
And he said, you know, when the sport gets recognition, as in when IMA becomes the regulator, they have regulatory power. When they get government approval, they don't have that yet. But when they do, he said he'd be willing to step down as IMA president. And I feel that's quite admirable because, like, I mean, he's doing all the... Like, I mean, I know Dino Wade is one of the hardest working lads in that whole body. But, like, I mean, for John to stay at the helm of that... Until they get any kind of power, and then to step down, I think you can't argue with it.
You can't argue with it. I have to say, you know, the only thing I'm frustrated with, Pete, and I said this to you, is that, well, you know, why couldn't we got this update 3 or 4 months ago?
We've been waiting a long time for some updates.
We've been waiting a long, long time for it. And, you know, it's great that it finally come out. We're getting that kind of information. But why isn't this being filtered back to us on a more regular basis, where we don't have to keep harping on about it for literally months? It's very, very frustrating.
But, I mean,
fair play to John for coming out and saying it.
John got on the phone, he spoke to me about it, and that's what I was kind of saying to him when I was speaking. I was like, you know, when you speak about this, it makes a lot more sense. Like, I mean,
of course,
you calm down a lot of hysteria.
Of course,
if you just make it be a bit more transparent. Emmett, I'm not speaking about John, but definitely Emmett.
That's what we need, and it is. It's good that he's come out and given you words on it, lines on it, because it's very much needed, and it puts our minds to rest for a little bit of time till we.
Well, when
have
people
a few
go, what's
questions.
Going on with Emma? I can go, all right, this is what's happening. Oh, and also, Emma will be getting ready. They say, John said they are ready to propose this to Sport Ireland. They're going to have to go through IMAC, which is controversial in itself, because IMAC once described MMA as pornographic dogfighting.
Sure, it is.
I don't disagree. But yeah, so that's going to be an interesting saga in itself, which I'm sure will take some time.
But it's crucial, man. It's crucial we get this put through and we get this resolved, because it's only going to benefit the future of the sport in this country. So we need it.
Of course, the biggest story in Ireland, apart from Cage Warriors last week, was Tom King's beef with John Kavanagh. I know I did ask John to speak, and he won't, as I said earlier, and that's fine. You got to respect that. But Tom did go through things in depth with us, and of course, he spoke about the great win for Ian Garry and Omran on Cage Warriors 110, and look forward to James Webb's title defense in November, later this month, should I say, against Natalius Frederick. Really can't thank Tom enough. What a coming out party it's been for Team KF Solid. Over this last week. They are doing tremendous things. One of the most talked, without a doubt, the most talked about gym coming out of Ireland at the moment, new gym. And yeah, it kind of reminds me of Renegade, who Natalius Frederick represents in the UK.
Just what about your gym?
My gym?
Yeah.
Oh, look, man.
Flying Seals or whatever you call them.
I'm keeping that under wraps for a long time.
Oh, sorry.
It's a conflict of interest. It's a conflict of interest. But look, here's Tom anyway. It was great to see Tom, Chris, Ash, all the KF lads in Cork. And thanks so much to Tom for his time. Hopefully this clears up a lot of stuff people have been asking about. And we'll see you again soon. And now I am joined by Tom King, who had a huge night tonight. Team KF, two victories. And really, one of the most talked about people in Ireland at the moment, one of the most talked about fighters in Ireland, Ian Garry, with a huge win again. It felt like a bit of a coming out party for you guys tonight, you know what I mean? Like, I feel like this was an event on home soil, and you've got all this talent that now went in the Cage Warriors ranks. Does it feel like that for you as well? This is nearly like the new crop of future UFC talent in Ireland.
Oh, absolutely. You know, the fact that it's the first Cage Warriors show back in Ireland in a number of years, and just the performance the guys put on. You know, you had Omran, that's his pro debut. The kid's only 19. You know, I know he looks about 35, but he's only 19. You know, and he looked like a seasoned pro. You know, he won every second of the fight. He took control. You know, he did all the stuff that Chris had worked on with him, and the grappling exchanges. He won all the grappling exchanges, all the classes he's done with me, kind of paying off. And then you had Ian. I mean, you know, aside from the reception he got, which was unbelievable, crazy. You know, he got caught with a shot early, was able to weather the storm and, you know, absolutely dominate the guy on the ground. You know, I've actually lost my voice a little bit now, screaming in celebration. You know, the fact he finished the rear naked choke, you know, he blew the roof off the Neptune, you know.
Yeah, and it's like with Ian as well, I don't know if you agree with this, but I felt as though, obviously, he did that interview with Sean Sheehan. It caught a lot of heat with the Bellator thing. I was just like, it kind of changes things in a way, because it was just a fight then, before that happened. And then it was all this expectation then, I felt. It was a new level of expectation because, of course, Ian said what he said about Bellator. All these Bellator fighters are shooting back at him. And, you know, they're at home hoping for this guy's downfall, right? Does that change things, do you feel, as a coach, like when a guy's preparing for a fight and it's not so much the physical side of things, but I guess the mental side of things? Do you feel like that does make it different?
It could make a difference, but not to someone like Ian. He has that side of his mind under control, and you can see it. He probably doesn't suffers from nerves like everyone does, but not to the same degree some other people do. And I don't think that weighed on his mind at all. And if you look at what he said, you know, what he said was, you go the Bellator route for money and you go the Cage Warriors route to as a slow build to get to the UFC. And that's true. And everyone who came out against him were saying, well, look, I'm earning X amount of money more than you. That's kind of his point, you know. So what he said was pretty factual. I think maybe it hurt a couple of people, but, you know, that's the truth. You go to Bellator to make money, and absolutely fair play to everybody doing that. You know, that's a great show. The guys are making a few quid, and that's brilliant. But Cage Warriors is the best show. It's the best show in Europe for the sport of MMA. It's not about spectacle. It's about sport. It's about building the athletes up and getting those young athletes to the UFC. We've missed a half a generation of fighters getting to the UFC. When was the last wave? The last wave is 2014. It's 2019 now. Where was the next wave of fighters? You know, we've missed a wave of fighters. These guys are 20, you know, 21. They would have been way too young 3-4 years ago. You know, this wave of fighters, we've missed half a wave of getting MMA fighters to the UFC. You know, who have we got left there now? We've got Connor left there, and we've got Joe. And they're part of the old guard. Where are the new guys? Why haven't the new guys come through? You have a new wave now, though. The fact that Cage Warriors have returned, you have Ian Garry, you've Reese there winning as well. Spectacular win. Brilliant, delighted for that team. Great team, very respectful team. And this is the new wave. This is the new wave. Those guys you see, you're going to see them in the UFC. I firmly believe that.
I remember when you guys started SBG Swords, as it was then, straight away, Chris and you were kind of telling me, we need to recapture the atmosphere that we had when we had all those guys marching towards the UFC, when Cage Contender was here, and it felt as though everyone was just right on the cusp, and there was this amazing energy. The golden era of Irish MMA probably was around that time. Do you feel like it can be done again? Because for a long time, I felt it couldn't. I just couldn't see, as you said, there was no path there anymore. I didn't feel as though we had that conveyor belt of talent going towards the UFC. And now, seeing the guys there tonight, and even some of the guys that weren't in the card, like Paul Hughes, of course, and I know you guys have a lot of fledgling pros there, like Taka and other guys like this, Adam Shelley, that people are very excited about. Andy Ryan, is Adam Darby and all these guys. Do you feel like this could be a second Irish invasion? That's how Graham Boylan put it to me last week.
It is. I mean, you thought you wouldn't see it again. You're seeing it happening. This is what happens. The guys don't suddenly appear on the UFC overnight. You know, when we were in the Long Mile, there's a slow build there. What happened was guys start winning Irish titles, start winning amateur titles, start winning Irish titles, Irish pro titles, then European titles, signed by Cage Warriors, and they use that to build towards the UFC. That's what happened before. And the systems that were in place then, we've put them back in to Team KF. And we've improved them. We've improved it with our experience, our successes and failures in the past. And the team we have now, you know, the original invasion, the golden age, if you want to say, it was some pool of people. You know, we had Connor and Chris and Ash and Cahill and Roddy and all the rest of them. But this is a much deeper pool. You know, we have these guys here. We've Ian, we've James, you know, we have Amran there. We have a wave coming behind them, and we've a wave coming behind them, and we've a wave coming behind them. You know, we've got kids with huge potential all the way, you know, back to 16 who are training in this, you know. So you are going to see it, and you're not going to miss half a generation. You're going to get this, we're going to have the second Irish invasion. And then we're going to continue that. We're going to roll it forward. And it's not just us. It is the likes of Rodney and Andy Ryan as well, who's standing beside us. And I think once it starts, you know, it's not going to be spectacular at first. You're going to have one or two guys will sign, and then one or two more. And then the replacements will be there as guys retire. Other younger fighters will take their place. And that's the way it should be. And it's the way it should have been, you know. And I think we are headed in that direction.
Yeah, and I think the fact that it wasn't there is why this is so exciting. You know, that we had that break and now we can see it. I think that adds to it an awful lot. But I got to ask, because, you know, you made a lot of headlines yourself in the lead up to this fight. It seemed to be Paddy Hoolan's book was a real catalyst for not only you, but a lot of people coming out and explaining where the relationships kind of broke down with John Kavanagh. You were very to the point. You gave even a timeline as to how this happened. And you initially shared just an excerpt from Paddy's book. He was referring to a time when you guys were all brought in and asked for €5,000 for your affiliation fee for SBG. You know, I know you and John were so close. Why was it this week that you felt like, you know, I have enough of this. I need to tell my story, so to speak.
It's simply down to the fact that Paddy's book came out. It's a fabulous book. Anyone who hasn't read it, go out, buy it. It's brilliant. I mean, I saw it there in Eason's. I think it was in the number one position, and it was there beside some random Irish rugby player's book. I'm not going to name them.
It's Jamie Heaslip.
Again, to another Twitter storm. But it you know, Jamie Heaslip, you know, no disrespect to him, came from a very good background, comfortable background. He had to work hard, but his book probably should have been titled it's fairly straightforward, lads. You know, you have the talent, you're gonna make it, you know. Paddy's was, you know, his story is wild, you know. You know, feral kids on horses, and you know, the absolute abandonment of an area in Jobstown. You know,
5-year-olds walking themselves home from the hospital.
I mean, you have kids who have no one to help them with their homework, you know. Go to school, don't go to school, it's up to you, you know. Now, Paddy is, he's a bit of a wild lad. He brought a horse home to live in the back garden. But he was the first kid in his in his family to get a leaving cert, you know. And you put that aside, we didn't know any of this stuff, you know, beforehand, because he didn't talk about it. You know, and then to go on and do what he did, you know, in the UFC, and then his coaching role, and then the fact he's owning, running his own gym, and he's a politician now, a successful politician. An absolutely amazing story. So if you're going to buy a book, don't buy the random rugby book, buy Paddy's book. It's it's one of the best books I've read in years. But there was a paragraph in that that detailed a meeting that we were called to. And it obviously Paddy has a long story to tell. I'm not the center star in Paddy's life. It's a paragraph, and it says, the meeting happened, the $5,000 fee was requested, and Tom King was there. Okay, so people are under the assumption, a lot of people, not everyone, that I, as the second highest black belt in Ireland, I think the second highest SBG black belt in Europe, would have been on the same side of the table as John, and people would labour under that impression. That's in the book. The book was released that week. So I put that out to explain exactly what happened, and that I wasn't sitting on the same side of the table as John. I was sitting on the same side of the table as Paddy. And it was to put that into context. And really all I did was put a number of cold, hard facts out there. What happened? Who was there? Who said what? Put them in. It was about 4 tweets, took about 10 minutes, bunged them all together so people could read it in context, and that was it. And the storm, if you want to call it a storm, a few people have called it a storm, that's other people sharing it, and that's people are digesting facts, and they're making up their own minds about it. That's nothing to do with me. The facts are the facts. This is the truth. That's what happened. You know, I have witnesses, I have the, you know, messages in writing, all the rest of it. There's a dozen people in that room. No one has come out to contradict me. So the facts are the facts. So really, I do see where the controversy is, but I don't see why anyone would have ill will towards someone doing that. And in fact, the messages I've gotten, the wave of support I've got, have showed me, bar one or two responses, that you know, that's the case. People, the truth is the truth, and that's it.
I guess, like, I mean, knowing everybody in Ireland who's trained jiu-jitsu or who has had even a passing interest in MMA will know that, you know, you're one of the first guys under John. You know, you're a very big deal in that SBG run as well. And it's like, was this a gradual kind of a distancing between you and John, or like, were you guys pretty close, and then this situation happened where you're brought to this meeting, you're asked to bring a solicitor, as you pointed out online. This situation happens. Is that just completely out of the blue? Like, I mean, up until that point, are you kind of like, well, we're close, we're good friends. If he had something to put to me like this, he'd definitely say it to my, you know, say it to me in person rather than this kind of solicitor situation and a meeting, and you're basically told this is how much you owe us to carry that SBG name, a name that you've helped to build in Ireland, of course.
Yeah, I mean, that's what the case was, that myself and John were, I mean, he was my coach. I was the first person he trained from white belt to black belt, and he was a friend of mine. And a lot of times we wouldn't go a day without, you know, messages, normally about training, not always, back and forth between us. And obviously I had set up a branch of the SBG in Swords. It's on the other side of the city. But we still had John over for seminars. He was down for, you know, two seminars in our gym, packed out, got on great with him. Always had a laugh with him when I met him at fights. You know, good relationship as far as I was concerned. Nothing had changed. And then, bang, out of the blue, a message appears on a group social media, which is for the SBG coaches in the association, that we were to go to a meeting on 2 days, that it was compulsory that we attended, that we should bring our solicitors, and that John was too busy to answer any questions and not to ring him. And that was it. That's how we found out. So I think, you know, for anyone who's maybe upset, or for anyone who's in SBG and they're circling the wagons, that's what happened. So that's how I was notified at the meeting. So if they're in that situation, just read what I posted up. How would they feel? You know, what did, you know, would they agree that that's a good way to treat someone else? And a couple of other people have said, oh, there's an attack on our team. This came out. I'm not attacking SBG. I absolutely have the utmost respect for the guys coaching there, and especially the fighters, the competitors, the people training there. Those people were my teammates, you know. I coached an awful lot of those people. There's people, I think there's one or two negative comments that came out, people who were in my classes. I, you know, wish them the very best in their career, the very best in their training. I hope they do well. You know, those in Bellator, I hope you win a Bellator belt. I hope you win a stack load of cash, enough to retire on, the very best to you. But this is what happened. I was a coach in, you know, of long standing. It's not just me as well. You know, there was me, there was Chris, there was Paddy in that room, and a number of other people. Anyone who hasn't kind of spoken publicly, I'm not gonna name them. It's up to them if they want to put their name forward or not. They were all in that room and they were treated the same way. So it's not just me, you know, it's not just me. And it, you know, it obviously it does annoy me that we were put in that situation. I see it as you know, it's a betrayal of what we did in SBG and what we helped build. You know, between us, you know, I had taught classes for free since 2006. You know, I was teaching classes in 2006 up to 2012. I was paying full membership there. So I was paying membership and I was teaching classes. You know, it was costing me 115 quid a month in tolls to get across. John moved to Iceland for 3 months. I taught all his classes. You know, most of the time when he's away in the UFC, who do people think we're teaching the classes? And again, not just me. It's me, Paddy, Chris was taking classes, you know, and the other coaches in the room, the ones who came up through that system were doing that as well. And we were treated as if we were, you know, blow-ins, that we were buying into a franchise. You know, I was there when the team was based in a school hall and he used to put the mats out every night and put them away in the evening. You know, that's where we come from. So, and again, that's just the facts, you know. So if people want to look at the facts and think a certain way, I can't control that, but the facts are the facts.
Were you surprised by the amount of people who, not just you, and you kind of saying, you reading Paddy's excerpt from the book, you kind of wanted to make sure it went down historically as you wanted it to go out, like, I mean, that you, what side of the table you were on, etc. But I mean, Aisling Daly comes out and she says how marginalised you feel, a legend, like the first world champion Ireland ever produced in MMA, a person who would have been synonymous with John. Then Joey Breslin, like, when a nicer guy you couldn't meet. I've never heard Joey say a bad word about someone in my life. I know the guy probably a decade. Both of these people come out and they seem to attach themselves to your side of the situation and kind of distance themselves from John. Were you surprised to see that so many people kind of, this wave of, you know, people coming forward, all stemming from Paddy's book? Were you surprised to see that?
No, I wasn't surprised. I think when Paddy had the bravery to write the book that he did, and again, we're talking about one paragraph in Paddy's book. Paddy's book is a very brave piece of work from start to finish. And there's a lot more in his book, stuff about his personal life, stuff about the upbringing. This paragraph is particular, and but there's other stuff. I mean, in terms of the SBG thing, this paragraph is not, let's say, the worst to happen.
Not the most damning probably thing about John that's said in the book either.
No, absolutely not, far from it. You know, and again, I don't really want to go into the other stuff because that involves Paddy and John directly. So I leave that up to people to read the book. They can decide. And if John wants to respond, he can respond. That's, we'll have to park that. But from what I've said, it's very mild compared to what else is in the book. And again, I did, as you said, I wanted to set the record straight and say exactly what my place was in that meeting, because Paddy didn't have the space, or the editors decided to take it out, whatever happened. The context of where I sat in that situation wasn't put there, and I think it is there now. Whatever else it is there now, you know.
I mean, I don't know if you want to answer this, but do you feel as though we could see more people coming forward, or is that just you know, is that too suggestive to even kind of say at this point?
I don't know, and again, it's up to people decide. And you know, there's a dozen people in that room. Some of those people had affiliates who were paying from the start. Some were kind of new people who brought in, and that's fair enough. Of the old guard who were in that room, that's up to them to decide whether they speak out or not. I'm certainly not going to speak on their behalf. Are they going to come out? I would have no idea. I know that there were a lot of conversations behind, let's say, we won't say behind closed doors, there's been conversations between people in that room in private. And there's a lot more that have, there's a lot more people there who haven't come out who would be very vocal in those conversations. So not everyone has come out. Will everyone come out publicly? I don't know. Some people may not want to, for whatever reason, and that's fine. And all those people in the room, from again the affiliates who were new, who were not part of the old SBG, to the people who've come out, to the people who haven't come out, I'm cool with all those people. You know, they shouldn't have been put in that situation, I don't think. So I've no problem whether someone comes out or doesn't come out. Is not my concern. I think possibly there could be more. There definitely are more people out there who would be, let's say, sitting on the same side of the table as me. So there's a lot more there, you know.
It was noted by me, a lot of media members, I was one of them, that the SBG didn't really note James's middleweight title win, which was considered by us a huge thing because it was, you know, a Cage Warriors title. This is where we were the last time when we started getting all these UFC guys going. And we saw, like, fighters, other SBG fighters, probably congratulate for, like, you know, lesser things in terms of the hierarchy of the sport than the Cage Warriors title. It was a few weeks after that, I believe, that the Team KF split was announced. I always wondered, was that, like, a straw that broke the camel's back at all? Like, the fact that, like, we clearly aren't getting the same support as other branches of this team. Was there any idea like that? I mean, did it just get petty at the end? Like, here, we have to leave.
Well, there's been no pettiness involved, certainly not from us. Like James was the, you know, there's only been three teams in Ireland. I think there's John's original team, there's Andy Ryan's and ourselves who have had a Cage Warriors champion. It's a huge deal. You know, it's a
How long were you guys going before when he's got that champion? It was like something crazy. It was like one year, 2 years?
Just short of 2 years. Okay. Yeah, just short of 2 years. So yeah, an incredible achievement for the team. And it was done under the SBG banner. Whatever had happened before, it was done under the SBG banner. And yeah, nothing was shared, nothing was said about it. But we knew that was going to happen because at that meeting, part of the 5 grand package was the use of social media platforms, which translated into, if you do not pay us this 5 grand, we're not sharing your tweets. So we knew that was going to happen. You know, we hadn't paid the fee, so our tweets weren't going to be shared. And I think on the same day, there was someone had won a local grappling competition and that was shared because they'd paid the fee. And that was as simple as that. So we knew that was going to happen. In terms of the name change, that was more a coincidence of time. I mean, if it was up to Chris would have changed the name. Not quite from the start, but probably maybe 6 months into it. And it was me who held him back. Why? Because, well, I'm, you know, in terms of, Chris is the head MMA coach, you know, a lot of people have no idea into the work he put in to get the results across the line tonight. They've no idea. They've no idea the personal sacrifice he makes from time away to his family. He does what I've never seen any other coaches do. I'm not going to go into everything as well because he's a lot of secrets in the bag, but he does amazing things with the team, you know. Like he'll be coming down at crazy hours on his own to give them the one-on-one time that they need. He's put a lot of these systems in place. Like as far as an MMA coach, I think in time he'll be recognised as the best in the world. But he would have been gone after 6 months. I held him back. I was part of, you know, he's the head MMA coach. I'm the head Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu coach or at the martial arts side of stuff, I'd be the head coach. And I know I held it back because I was part of a tradition with SBG. I was a black belt with them. And that kept, you know, I was loyal to that system and I kept to it. And as far as I'm concerned, the loyalty wasn't very well repaid. And when that happened, then the train was set in motion. It takes a long time for a name change. We obviously had a professional graphic designer. Happens to be my sister, Joan. Shout out to Joan. Amazing logo. Went down very well. So took her time to design it. Took time to come up with the name. And that coincided just to fall just shortly after James had fought. But it wasn't really related to that. That wasn't the last straw that broke the camel's back. We were told that we hadn't paid for the social media platform, so that the tweets weren't going to go out. So we knew that. So that
seems crazy. Like when we're talking about here, like a social media situation, right? Like was that a weird one for you? I know you're a big, you know, social media celebrity now, but this is quite a recent thing for you. I mean, you must have found it hard to get your head around that kind of pricing on such a thing.
I'm 41. I still don't understand the thing. Like I thought with this, I was just putting out a few bullet points there just to clear up a few things. But, you know.
Is it disappointing? Like, I mean, you know, look, I've fallen out with friends before. It's horrible. But like 15 years, like it generally doesn't happen, right? Like when someone's been around for that long, it's hard to get rid of them, so to speak. And this has happened now. Like, I mean, I'm sure you're past disappointed or upset, but I mean, it must have been for a while where you were like, you know, is this the way this is going to go?
Well, for me, going into that meeting, I thought I'd landed on a different planet, you know, and I still can't get my head around where this came from. You know, to be clear, it wasn't just John in the room. You had Matt Thornton and you had Travis Davison. But to sit a group of fairly cynical kind of guys who've been through the mill down, and we were given a video presentation. It was like they were selling like a timeshare or something. It was, you know, that cheesy American video.
And we like Lobo Gym in out of Dodgeball, like when Ben Stiller is advertising his gym, kind of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it was like you know, an American coach going how great SBG is, and a big smile and a thumbs up to the camera, and then some student. I'm going, lads, I was here when this was in a school hall. Like, why are you showing me this? You know, I know what you're showing to me, but you're showing it to the wrong. To the wrong person. So for me, like I thought, walked through a door to a different dimension. I didn't know what was going on. I still am scratching my head. It was a 2-day meeting. Now this the bit that, you know, I tried myself not to go on a rant, but I, you know, they were talking about business. We're business experience. We're business savvy. Like I was coaching. I worked in business. You know, I was a video games buyer. I worked for HMV and Extravision for years. And before that, I ran stores for them. I've been in business for years. You know, since the age of 18, I've gone to hundreds, if not thousands, of meetings. I've never gone to a meeting where someone is looking for something for you and they don't offer you a cup of tea or coffee. I've never, like, just the lack of respect. And we were told then, go out, get yourself some lunch. Didn't even provide lunch, right? And come back when you're ready. I'm going, lads, I'm going to get lunch. I'm going to buy Chris lunch. And I'm not coming back. How does that sound? So that was a 2-day meeting. I was only there for half a day. And, you know, did I find it strange? I found it absolutely bizarre. And I still do.
Like, I mean, now I know this is going on quite long. I'm very sorry about that. But I feel like, you know, a lot of people want to know what's going on here. But, I mean, you must feel as though, you know, making that name change, going out on your own, the success you've had in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu this year is astronomical. The success of the MMA team has been astronomical. It must feel like a great move in hindsight, one of the best things you've done, based on this, the way it's taken off since you've done it.
I think it's a blessing in disguise. You know, we're delighted with the name change. And I think if this happened, it may have not have been something that that we would have done. You know, we were accused, well, I was directly accused by the brother of the SBG vice president, Ricky Davison. He said I was a loser focusing on winners. Our team has a 90% success rate, a 90% win rate in MMA. I don't remember ever seeing a team with that, you know, and that's not coincidence. It's the systems that we've put in place and the team that we've built. My own win rate, I was directly called a loser. My own win rate is 90%. You know, I've 14 medals this year. I've won 8 gold.
Decent, not bad.
I've won eight gold medals. Like I've more medals than the SBG hierarchy combined, you know, and then yet people associated with them turn around and call me a loser. I mean, they don't compete. You know, they're putting up quotes from Marcus Aurelius. He was a guy who was on the front line. I'm on the front line. You're not on the front line, so don't turn around and accuse me of that. You know, the name, but as I said, the name change, we're absolutely delighted with it. If this hadn't happened, we probably wouldn't have done it. We probably would have remained in SBG. We're Team KF now. This almost feels like a coming out party. You know, the performance that the guys put on, You know, and then this is on the back of win after win after win. And it's only going to build from here. So we're delighted. Our team is delighted. The, you know, the messages of support that we've got. I think the goodwill that we've generated with anyone who isn't an SBG. And that's, again, that's not me. That's just me putting out facts. Is amazing how well we get on with other teams. I've already organised, you know, 3 or 4 cross training days with other teams. We have an open door policy. We don't charge a drop in rate. We always have people from different teams dropping in and training. We were down ourselves down in T45 Jiu Jitsu. They opened the door. They stayed late. They let us in. We had a few roles. James did his rounds. Did his pad work. Brilliant. That's what we're about, you know. And for the SBG guys out there, again, no ill will against the fighters, the team, the coaches. That should be clear. Like, if I met John at a fight tomorrow, I'd shake his hand, I'd shake Matt's hand. They mightn't shake mine, but, you know, as far as I'm concerned, there's no ill will. This is me putting out the truth of what happened to put something into context so people wouldn't get the wrong impression. The storm that's built up is... That's not me. I'm not sharing it. I'm not telling people how to think. That's down to people to interpret the information that they have. So this has happened. It'll die down. We'll move on. Fully independent team. And our guys are going in one direction. They're going up. And guys are going to the UFC from our team. Multiple guys are going to end up there. We're going to be a very well-known team around the world. Our jiu-jitsu team is going to continue to develop, give us the results. And then the guys who don't compete are going to continue to train, you know, enjoy the team. We have a massive amount of people down from the gym here supporting, a massive amount. Yeah, the hotel is filled with Team KF members. I don't remember that happening in a long time. You know, our team is buzzing. The jiu-jitsu class there, last Friday, it was 40 people on the mats. And that's the 4 class of the day. You know, everything... That has happened. I'd rather it didn't happen. You know, I do feel a sense of betrayal over what happened, but it is a blessing in disguise for us because it led directly to the creation, not of Team KF. We were that team before, but the name, you know, having that name as our own is a big deal, and that probably or possibly wouldn't have come without this, and that, you know, that's a blessing.
Just finally, obviously, James has that big rematch coming up in London against Natalius. He feels like he's just thereabouts, that UFC thing. You know, do you expect him to go to the UFC in, say, 2020? Is that realistic?
I think absolutely it is. I think if he puts on a performance against Natalius, which he will, I think you're going to see a very, very strong performance. It was, in my view, a questionable decision draw. The last time, I think James clearly won that fight. He's going to put it beyond a shadow of a doubt this time. He's a man on a mission for this one. And I think this is going to put him, you know, on the road to the UFC for next year without a doubt.
And from what I've seen, of Ian Garry fighting in Ireland today, that's going to go down very well when it eventually happens in Dublin. And I think without a shadow of a doubt, Team KF are going to be a huge part of that show in Dublin when it comes back again. We're probably looking at a guy that will be the face of Cage Warriors in a few years to come. I even spoke to Graham Boylan today, and he compared him to the likes of Paddy Pimblett in Liverpool, Jack Shaw in Wales. He thinks right now Risa and Ian together could probably bring that kind of atmosphere to the show themselves. But is it safe to say that James is the guy you're looking at as the first one from KF to get to the UFC? Is Ian the second one? Could it be 2021? He's talking about having 5 fights next year, getting to 8-0, and then just going straight in. What's your plan? What do you see it like? Would you prefer him to remain cautious and take his time with this thing, or do you think 2021 could be a realistic thing with him?
I don't think trying to get Ian to be cautious would work. I don't think he's that kind of personality, and we're certainly not going to try and shoehorn something like that on him. I think you're right. I think James will be the first fighter from Team KF in the UFC, and that will possibly or probably most likely be next year, and Ian will follow, I would imagine, the year after, probably late 2021. I can't tell the future, but that seems to be the projection that he's on. I mean, you look at him there today, his performance and the reception he got, you know, he's, I think he's destined to be uh, to be something special in the game. And he is on that trajectory. He's on that course. And we would very much expect him to be the second one after James.
We've done 30 minutes, Tom. I've taken way too much out of your celebrations. Is there anything that I haven't touched on that you'd like to share, or do you think we've put a nice bow on it there?
No, I mean, that covers everything. But, you know, to finish, if there's anyone there from any associations, any affiliates, or groups who feel they're pushed around by a large association, I'm there, and I'm not the only one. There's plenty of black belt coaches in Ireland who are like that. I'm there to stand shoulder to shoulder with you. I'll offer you support. I'll offer you training with a second degree black belt. I'll give you advice, and I won't charge you for retweets. So if there are anyone out there, send me a message, and we'll take it from there, you know.
Social media sensation Tom King, thank you so much, sir.
Thanks, Petey. Cheers.
Thank you so much to Tom King. That was a truly, truly great amount of time he gave me. And this is also in the thick of it when the celebrations are going down afterwards and I take Tom away from everybody.
Yeah, robbing him from his points, yeah. Having to talk to you. What a nightmare.
Nah, no, fair play to him.
Worse.
He's really, really appreciate it. And,
I don't know if I'd be so welcome. No, you wouldn't.
No, absolutely not.
No.
So look. That's what happened there. There's a bit more info on the situation. So let's move on and talk about what happened last week. We've already talked about Cage Warriors a bit, but I can't stop singing its praises. It's absolutely unbelievable, Niall. Real excitement, real stakes, really regional. The next generation of UFC fighters are Cage Warriors. You know, do we have anything else to say about this? I mean, let's talk about the performances, I guess. Yeah, Reese McKee against Hakon Foss. Death, as he's known, Hakon Foss.
Yeah, I think they should give that to Reese. After that, we talked about the touch of death and evident, the man, you know, straight out, very tactical, threw that jab and it was game over. Unbelievable.
Yeah, absolutely.
It just shows you the power. And it was very interesting as well, your interview with him afterwards. I didn't even realise Reese was left-handed. It was crazy, absolutely crazy. So, listen, the guy's going places. I think we've said it for a long, long time. We've known it. And, you know, why not, as I said earlier on, do that title shot with him and Ross Houston? I think it's right while the iron's hot for Cage Warriors as well. There's a lot of talk going to be around Reese going into that fight if they do it.
I'll tell you,
Houston and Dalby, you know, there's a lot of stakes on the line there. I think it could fast-track one of them towards the UFC.
I just feel like Houston was asked to fight Dalby in Denmark at one point, and he wouldn't. You know,
there's issues with him as well. We talked about the Pal Harris stuff as well last week. So, you know, is everything sitting right there?
You know, Graham spoke about this afterwards, and I understand. Same thing as you said, like a champion can't really be competing in another promotion, basically.
Agree.
Even though it's not MMA, it's risking his health, and you know. I don't know. Like, will Houston take that fight? Is Reese next in line? Is another question. Like, I mean, there's a lot of good guys there at welterweight in
of course there
Cage
is.
Warriors.
But the thing I sort of think when you're saying that is,
like, I think he's ready to fight for the title.
Yeah,
you know?
Because if you look at what he's done at lightweight, I know it's a lot different at welterweight. But when you've a guy that has that star power behind him and an interest behind him, fast track him. Why not? And I think he's ready for it. Like, it's not as if he's had two or three pro fights.
Yeah,
you know,
I suppose,
I mean?
He's been the champion of Bama.
Yeah, and he's fought, like, he's, you know, he did fight, who did he fight in Bama? Terry Brazier. He's a bloody fucking welterweight. Do you know what I mean? Like, so do it. Like, look how good he looked at 170.
Yeah, he did look really impressive. And, you know, whatever happens, whatever fight it is, like, it's going to be huge.
Yeah,
for
it's going to be
always
fast.
Like, I mean, even the beef there with Alex Lahore, I think that's a style match.
Yeah, there you go. Again, that's another one.
Yeah, that's incredible.
And Alex sells fights as well. Alex talks a lot of Brown, and it's good Brown. He creates interest, like, do you know what I mean?
So, it's a good Brown.
It's, you know, I'm up for that as well, like, either or. And I think Reese is.
It was so important that all these guys won, though, the other night. Like, I was saying this before the event. Jesus, if one of these lads loses, it takes a lot of showing off. And they all come away with first round knockouts. McKee, McColligan, Gary.
Yeah, I think a lot was on the line for Joe. And I'll give Joe a little bit of credit here. Joe was very beaten up before that fight. He wasn't, he even said it to me, you know, Ben Lacter, he hadn't fully recovered from that.
That's like two savage strikers fighting each other, like him and Ben.
Yeah.
Ben Lacter, unbelievable
fight.
What
a fight. Like, yeah. Cage Warriors fight of the year so far for me. And, you know, that fight, to go out and take a short notice opponent coming all the way in from Saudi Arabia, it's a risk for him as well. People weren't even saying that. And he dealt with it fantastically. And fair play to Joe. There's a lot on the line for Joe. And Joe's right up there as well, man.
He's saying all the right things as well. Like, I mean, look, just on paper, right? If they're doing an event in Belfast, imagine Reese McKee v. Alex Lahore, Joe McColgan v. Paddy Pimblett. Come on, man. That's insane.
I don't think... I think they do Joe Paddy as a headline somewhere else, though. I would imagine maybe
Reese is co-main then. Because Paddy is the biggest not? Name in cage warriors.
Yeah,
still.
Why not spread it out a little bit?
I love Joe actually speaking after the fight. The way he called out Paddy, like, it was like, look, I'm not disrespecting the guy. I think he's a savage.
He just wants to fight.
I want to fight the best guy, like... You know, is that too much to ask?
No, there's nothing wrong with it.
I feel like Joe, the way he sells fights, and Paddy, the way he sells fights, that would be insane.
Brilliant.
That'd be mental. Like, Joe said after the fight, like, this is the fight to make in 2020. I completely agree with him. That'd be mental.
Make it. Like, there's no reason why they should not make that fight.
Or is it going to be bigger in Liverpool because Paddy's such a huge name there? I mean, there's a lot.
I want to ask you this question, and maybe it might be a bit controversial, and I don't really give a crap because, we're paid to say our views, and, you know... Is Paddy potentially not interested in this fight? Does he look at this as too much of a risk?
Well, I think it's just hard for him because he's going to be fighting Donovan Desmond in 2 weeks. So it's hard for him to be like, oh, yeah, okay, after this one, I'll do that one. You know, and the fact that, like, the last time he was on the show, Paddy has a lot of injuries. Like, he doesn't know how his body's going to hold up out there. So I respect the fact that he has a fight lined up. I respect the fact that the star making power that he has within Cage Warriors, like, Sarum back fights Paddy. Yeah, he's off to the UFC. Like, people, when they beat Paddy Pimblett, you go to the UFC pretty much. You
know I agree.
And Nad Narimani is another example.
Yeah.
And Paddy, like, for Joe and Paddy, like, I don't understand. I think a lot of it will rest with Paddy, what he wants to do. But we've got to factor in as well, like Graham said after the fight, like, that's a hard fight for us to make. Both of those guys are in intensity fight management.
Yeah, and I think if Graham's looking at it from his point of view and intensity fight management point of view, he's going to want both them to go to the UFC. It makes more money for everyone.
So you're slowing down one of them, basically. Huh?
That's the bottom dollar, man. And it is the bottom dollar, literally.
But McColligan crushed Robbie Scott, man.
Amazing performance.
He devastated him, like, and he just looked so fresh afterwards. You know, unbelievable fat Joe. What about Brad Warren? Did he say fat Joe?
Yeah.
Oh, amazing.
He did. He got what one fat Joe. He goes, basically, if this got a round three, Joe is going to let me call me fat Joe. So he got a fat Joe.
Thank
fair
you,
play to
Brad and Josh. You
How
legends.
How dare you call me an effing scumbag afterwards? What a dirtbag.
Does he think you're from Blanchardstown all of a sudden or something?
No, I did. Listen, I did give him a lot of grief all week.
He said he had, like, several Fat Joe songs.
I'll show you. Like, I was literally sending him the Fat Joe. Like, I'll probably even play if he's here, if he's
on.
No,
sorry.
Like,
no.
But I did send him the actual instrumental version. I thought the lyrics were a little bit, ugh. So I gave him the instrumental and gave him a few options. But he said he'd do it. So he actually bottled it. Like, he said 100% I'd do it. So
Joe cracked the Don.
Joe cracked the Don. He did. He bottled the Don. Jesus.
What about this Gary lad? Like, he's in Cork, and unreal. It's like Ian Gary fever in the fucking arena.
Unreal. Unbelievable.
And look, he came through adversity there as well. Like, Figlak, fair play to him, cracks him early.
Yeah.
Ian kind of told me afterwards it looked more wobbly than it was, you know, because he was moving backwards.
Worse.
No, he said, like, it looked less wobbly, should I say, even. Because I was like, you got wobbled there, and Ian's like, no, I didn't. And I was like, all right.
A wonderful performance. You know, the thing, and I said, probably again, we look at this fight to his last opponent, where he was able to make in-cage adjustments at the time. And that's what is probably more impressive to me, that
Beautiful.
He can adjust his game under adversity. And he did that again. The guy is so mature as well when you hear him speak afterwards. He knows the fight game.
He's polished, man.
That's the word he used. He's going to get better and better. And to think he's only 21 years of
age. To have that IQ, like, to get hit, like, with a good shot and then take the fight down immediately. And even the way his leg, the way it kind of went behind Figlak's leg as he was applying the rear naked choke. Lovely little details there. Really, really good. And, you know, just, he seems to have it all. Like, there's no part of him where you're like, oh yeah, he's going to struggle there. He doesn't struggle with anything, you know.
And then you hear him on the mic afterwards as well, and it's the complete total package of what a mixed martial artist would be.
He's like, he's running around talking to every fan there at Cage Warriors. He's giving everyone his time. This fella's going to be a superstar if he keeps going the way he is.
Definitely.
There's no doubt about it. And I feel like if he
carries on the way he's...
I feel like if they do a Dublin show at the end of 2020, that would be huge for him. It would be mental for him.
Yeah, listen. Adam
Barbie from Rhino. Make him go pro as well. Get him out there.
James Sheehan,
all these
his.
Lads. Mental.
What they need to do with him is give him two more fights. Before maybe June next year, two or three more fights. I'd like to see him take a little bit of time off now till Christmas, two after Christmas, and then potentially look at a co-main.
Wants to fight five, yeah. He wants
Dublin. Why not?
John Mitchell, sensational performance in his pro debut against a very, very tough Eric Nolan. And Paul Redmond speaking after it, like, you know, feels like Eric could make featherweight. I think I spoke to Eric myself afterwards. Boy, so such a dangerous fighter. He's all the hallmarks of Team Rhino, those beautiful little hooks to the body, left hook drops John Mitchell early on. This lad known for his striking prowess. Eric dropping him, unbelievable.
Was Andy there?
He wasn't. Andy or Red weren't there.
Oh,
I did see Keith McCabe and
the Butcher,
Dermot O'Bookley. So it was great to see those lads. But yeah, that's pretty much it on the Cage Warriors. Nathan Fletcher started off the main card with a rear naked choke win. Unfortunately for Jack McGorry, so well followed down there, didn't get the win. Decky McAleenan gets his first Cage Warriors win, which is great. And Cole Manning, Omron Shaban from Team KF there, and Patrick Lahan, I just want to mention as well, insane knockout he got there. Huge uppercut, I believe Andy Stevenson put out the tweet. But a brilliant event all in all, and I'm very excited. I'm a bit jaded, and when things like this happen, it changes everything, right?
It does.
We have a whole new thing to look forward to.
It does. It's great. And it's, as we said earlier on, momentum is key in mixed martial arts, and it's going to give Cage Warriors a lot of momentum going in 2020, and I think everyone's excited. And
I disagree with you.
I like the little bit of time off that they're not coming back here. I think it starves the market. People put more eyes on them when they eventually come back, builds it up a little bit more. And, you know, I'm not
But are they
going to
fight before then? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, well, I'd say, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. But yeah. I think maybe Reese McKean might take it
But
off.
I mean, I'm not giving out. Like, I mean, it's just one slight detail. Yeah. Like, ideally, if it was in March, it would be fantastic.
Yeah, yeah,
you know?
Of course.
Tell me about UFC Moscow, because it was like being in a vacuum at Cage Warriors, man. Yeah. Nobody was down with the UFC.
Listen, no, there was some really good performances, I think. A lot of decisions on the night, but I think the ones to take away from, I don't know if you saw that front kick from Magomed Ankalaev against Dalsha Lumjiambula.
I was really looking forward to that one. Snap, and I missed it.
Honestly, unbelievable. Go back and look that out. That was an unbelievable front kick from him. Danny Roberts as well, man. We talked about it last week, right?
A lot of Russians put to the sword on that main card, apart from the main and co-main.
There was. And Khabib's husband as well in the first round. Conor McGregor had a number of tweets about that during the night. He was over the moon.
Oh, deadly. He never does that.
But I have to give a shout out to Danny Roberts. We talked about it last week. Really good boxing clinic from Danny Roberts there. Unbelievable left hook.
I put out an article about
Selim Imdayev.
Beforehand, kind of saying, like, if I fought that Pereira again, I'd knock him out. I really feel like that's a huge possibility. And the people in the comments, what are you doing? Like, have you seen this fella knockout people? Have you seen his end camp knockout? Have you seen the shit he's done? Have you seen him trading with Mike?
Rewind.
Yeah, yeah.
The broadcast and watch it last week. Unbelievable. Unbelievable sleeping shot.
And
from,
what about Davey Grant making his every Davey's 5 year appearances?
Davey's a great guy. I love the guy, SPG Manchester lad, and he's a good dude, and I was glad to
see him. He's great, man.
I was glad to see him. He's had a lot of injuries, man, Davey, over the years, and I'm just glad to see him back with a good win there.
Hopefully he can keep that momentum going to
definitely next year,
March,
and
there
get
in
two or three or four fights in a year. That's what he needs.
I don't think Dave is going to be happy with his career until he fights one of the top bantamweights in the UFC. And like, 100%. People forget he beat Marlon Vera.
Yeah, yeah. like it's just about getting momentum. We say it again, we use it every week. It is that word, and that's what Davey needs in 2020. Yeah, is that not the wrong way around?
Okay. No, Penny won.
All right, okay, yeah. That was a good win there for Penny. I didn't see any of the prelims, I'm not going to lie.
All right, sorry, man. And David Zawada with a much-needed win against Abukar, as you said there earlier. Zawada was on a two-fight skid before that one. My man Roman Kopylov, one of my prospects to watch in 2019.
Carl Robertson took him down.
Robertson's a beast. Like, that's a hard fucking first fight, man. Jesus Christ.
Are you upset?
I'm crying
a little bit.
Tell me about Greg Hardy in the co-main, if you can.
I want to just mention Ed Herman first as well.
Sure, what views,
man, we said it last week. The dude is tough as fucking nails. He just went for three rounds, solid, relentless stuff. And interesting to note, Ed Herman said afterwards, he said he doesn't know where his MMA career goes from here. He's had a lot of injuries. He feels beaten up. He just feels tired.
Understandable,
so,
man.
The guy's always in a war. And again,
he's been fighting since the First World War or something.
Yeah, he's class. He's brilliant. I love watching the guy fight. Greg Hardy, listen to me. I know, you know,
I will listen to you.
I've changed my mind so many times about Greg.
He's a big fan.
I thought he made noticeable improvements from his first to his second fight. You didn't. Then I shot on him after what he did with the inhaler, because it was the second one last week. And in fairness to him, man, He did fucking well. He did, you know, he used his athleticism. He hurt his hand actually in the first as well.
Did you get the inhaler out at all?
No, he didn't. I was waiting for something to happen. Nothing happened. I thought I don't know what was going to happen. It was something mental that he eye poke him on purpose or something. But listen, didn't happen. Thankfully, Volkov clearly won the fight. But listen, man, Greg Hardy, you know, he was in there. He was definitely in there. No, but he didn't look out of his depth. You know what I mean? Don't be just smart.
Did he not know?
Not really, no. And I was really impressed.
Was Alexander just being very conservative? Because
it was noticeable that he hurt his hand as well.
But I mean, was Volkov being conservative against him, or was he?
Not really. No, he was trying to get off him. But he's a quick dude, man. Even from the get go, he went.
Did he?
He just. His athleticism is obviously one of his key facets, and man, the dude can hit as well. But he obviously hurt his hand the first, took away a weapon. He was crying and all afterwards. I actually felt a little bit sorry for him.
What?
Yeah, he was crying. He was so disappointed with his performance.
Who was crying?
Greg Hardy. He was so disappointed. So disappointed with his performance, and maybe that says a lot about him. I don't think he's as bad as people are making out to be in terms as a fighter. In
okay,
the
cage. All right.
I'm not saying he's a good person.
Once we have that cleared up,
that's definitely clear.
I heard everybody was complaining that this wasn't a 5-round main event.
Listen, I'm not that fussed about it. Like, I think actually Calvin Kattar probably would have won.
I heard it was very close.
Zabit didn't do 5, I'm convinced, because I don't think he's the gas tank to do. I was very concerned about his gas tank, man. He started noticeably fading after midway through the second round in that fight, and it was close. Now, I did have it for Zabit, but I think that's possibly one of the reasons why. It was obviously supposed to be a different main event. But I think maybe there's issues there with the gas tank. That's a big worry going into 2020. He's going to be looking for a title shot next year. I still don't think he gets Max Holloway.
Calvin Kattar, like, tough fight.
Tough
though,
too,
right?
The guy can throw bombs as well. Like,
how about Chris Fishgold got Calvin in his debut? That's horrible.
There you go. But listen, it was a great technical fight. Very, very good stuff. But I'd just be a little bit concerned about Zabit. He just looked like he really did tire midway to that second, going into the third.
I had to watch KSW 51 this morning.
Was it good?
It was very good, yeah. Marius Pudzianowski, main event win over Echo Young. Kind of like Moscow in the respect that a lot of the Balkan guys didn't do very well.
Just saying Moscow.
Boris Mankowski beat Vaso Bokasevich in the co-main event. Obviously, Vaso was there 5 years ago. He comes back, massive fanfare being in that neck of the woods. He's from Montenegro, I believe. And Mankowski choked him out.
Savage.
Beautifully. Anton Rakic, a big win for that neck of the woods. Croatian becomes the first bantamweight champion with a win over Damian Stasiak. Stasiak actually really started very well in that fight. Alexander Ilic suffered a defeat to Cezary Kesic. That would have been one of the fights that a lot of people would have been looking forward to over there. So that's a bit of a disappointment for Alexander,
that's an upset,
I'm sure.
Is it?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Daniel Torres as well beat Philippe Pejic. That would have been disappointing as well, unfortunately, for the crowd. But looked like a tremendous event. I think I saw 11,000 people in attendance for an event in Zagreb. Trip there. I think it's really, really good. And imagine if they had Saldic on that card, man. It would have been out of this world. I'd say they could sell twice that maybe with that guy on the card.
Definitely.
Also, just wanted to note about Octagon there selling 20,000 tickets. Unbelievable. The Czech Republic, I believe it. Yeah, really amazing things. Don't really know an awful lot about the fighters. I'm not going to lie. I'm not going to pretend I do.
We were only notified by one of our listeners who's from the Czech Republic, Emil Korda. And, it's obviously not very well promoted on social because
huge there, though, right?
Huge there, which is amazing. And I think it's great for the scene there. But I'd like to know a little bit more about it. And I must see if we can pull up that fight anywhere online.
Yeah, I think they sent us a link to it. I just, look, lads, there was way too many fights
so busy,
on.
Yeah, of course.
But brilliant. It's great to see, for sure. But I'm not going to sell you some wolf tickets about how I think this guy needs to work on his cardio or some bullshit because I don't know what was going on.
Yeah.
We have Big Paul Craig with us this week who got the fight that he called for on Eurobash a few months ago. He is fighting Shogun Hua at UFC Sao Paulo this weekend. So we are going to talk to Paul Craig and we'll be back in about 10 minutes to look at what is to come this weekend in this never-ending wheel of events after events after events. Thank you. Yeah, man, it's crazy because like Shogun is one of those guys that it immediately makes me think of when I was first getting into the sport. My brother was getting me into the sport and he had all these highlight videos of Shogun, who was just, you know, a young kid basically from Shootbox who was in Pride at the time. And, you know, he always has that kind of mythological kind of thing about him where he's one of these, he's kind of old school, but he's also present. How did this come about, right? Because it is quite short notice, and I know you wanted it, but this fight, when did you first hear about it, that it could be a possibility?
So, one of my friends had messaged me saying, did you see Shogun Hua's opponents pulled out, which was Sam Alvey? So then we had sent a message to the UFC, and the UFC had said, listen, we'll put it to him and we'll see if he's interested in taking a fight. Both myself and my coach had this conversation, you know, why would he not take a fight? That's what we kept saying to each other. Why would he not take a fight? He's Shogun Hua. He is a co-main event. He needs a fight, and I'm a favourable opponent for him. In regards to, he could get somebody in that division who's an absolute stud, or he can get somebody like me who's maybe I'm underselling myself here, but who's not as studdish, if you will, as the other guys there. So I was like, he'll definitely take it. And then on Monday that Shogun was going to accept the fight, we had received the contract, and before I'd even signed the contract, the fight was already released. Somebody get a hold of it, and then I don't know how it happened, but I'd went into the gym and it came back out, and there was my fight, and everybody knew about it.
That's amazing, man. It's amazing. And I'm wondering, like, you know, what does he mean to you? I mean, do you have the same kind of thing when you were getting into MMA, that you were, you know, watching those old school Shogun Rua highlight reels, or was it just one of those guys that you know was in that legendary pack? Does it have any personal meaning for you, or is it just in the broad sense of things, he's a legend of the sport?
So I'm relatively new to the sport. I'd only really taken the sport up like seven and a half years ago. Like, my whole MMA career has lasted about 7-8 years at the most.
That's crazy.
And he was one of these guys who I knew about, and I was interested in watching him. I like his style, and I had always said, like, if I ever got to fight him, he'd be the guy I'd like to fight. I think stylistically matching me up with him is a really, really favourable fight for myself as well. So we went into the gym when we actually signed the contract, and I could barely hit pads with excitement. I felt like a schoolboy. I felt like a school child waking up Christmas morning and getting this present.
That's amazing. what do you say to people who kind of, like, I saw this a bit, like, our own Guilherme Cruz put out the story that this fight was happening. He's our Brazilian correspondent. And I saw people in the comments saying, like, oh, it looks like Paul Craig's getting his opportunity against the ghost of Shogun Hua. And I'm like, this guy just knocked out Tyson Pedro. Like, I mean, what do you guys want? I mean, did you hear a lot of that? The opinion that he's on the slide, does that take away from this when that's the opinion of some of the fans out there?
You know, he's still a very dangerous fighter. Regardless of his age, regardless of how he turns up to a fight now, he's still this dangerous fighter who has, what we're talking about, let's say 15 years plus of experience of fighting high-level opponents. So for him to say that he's not got it is, why don't they step in an octagon with him and see how long they last? You know what I'm saying? Like, when somebody's like, ah, he's not got it anymore, like, all right, just then you come and jump in there and see how you do against him. So he's an experienced opponent. He's probably not the same athleticism-wise as he was back in the day. His body shape's changed, but that's to be expected. But if you've got the skill, like he does, you never lose that. It's like when you watch football players like Ryan Giggs or Paul Scholes, and you see them and they're still playing, like, you know, low-level football, and they've still got the vision. They can still see it. They might not have the legs to physically do it where they used to, but they can still play football at a high level.
Form is, what is it? Form is temporary, class is permanent. Isn't that what they say, Paul?
Yep. That is. And he's got the class. And I know I'm coming across here as being like a fanboy and being like, but no, I'm getting there to put on a performance. I'm getting there to, I really want to win. That's like, every time I step in the octagon, I want to win, and I want to win in the most easiest way possible. And for me, that is grappling. But you can't really, my striking has improved so much. I started fighting in Bama to now where I'm at. So who knows how this fight goes?
It's is it daunting going over to face a Brazilian in Brazil because of the, a lot of people say it's very difficult to fight over there due to the hostility in the crowd. And as you said, like, this isn't just any Brazilian you're facing, right? Like, this is a legend of the sport, a pride champion, a UFC yep. champion, you know. Is that daunting in some kind of way?
I think it gives me that wee bit of fire, you know, a bit of spark. I quite like that. I like going to the Lion's Den and going in to his den and having a wee steal, you know, stealing that victory from him. That's what I'm looking to do. I always go travel to another country for a fight. I've been very, very lucky in my UFC career to fight twice in the UK. Every other fight's been out with, and it's been in the US, Mexico, Australia. I get to travel about, and for me, that's a bonus that comes with this job.
Yeah, absolutely. The one thing I notice about this fight, and I'm really happy to see it, is the fact that they have given you like a notable, like one of a big name in the UFC, a guy who's already established there. Because I had a feeling like it just felt like they were lining you up with all these undefeated prospects, one after another. And I mean, I was kind of like, well, yeah. When's he going to get this big opportunity? Like, and when you said Shogun, I think it was 6 months ago when you're on the show, I was like, yeah, that's perfect. Like, I mean, is that mean a lot to you as well? That instead of maybe taking on an unknown guy where you're bringing all the name value to a fight, you're taking on the legend this time. He's the guy who's known so well all around the world. Does that feel good?
It does feel good. You know, as you're saying, I have always been like the gatekeeper for the UFC. If you can beat Paul Craig, you deserve to be in the UFC. If Paul Craig beats you, then there's a good chance you're getting kicked out of the UFC. And now that I've sort of paid my dues, you know, that's 8 fights I've had in the UFC. 2 contracts, now moving into my 3rd contract, 1st fight, and I get an opportunity like this. And both myself and Brian, my coach, spoke about this, and we were like, that's an opportunity, we can't pass this up. Like, it's going, looking at myself and Shogun Hua's path, we're both in different paths. If he wins or he loses, he goes in a different direction to the way I go, if I win or if I lose. And the only opportunity that I believe that I would get to fight him is if I take it last minute, and it turned off at the right time. I come off that camp uninjured from Mexico City, which was a bonus. No injuries. Had a really, really good fight camp with regards to the cardio output. It was through the roof. It slept in that oxygen tent, which just increased my red blood cells. It made me have more oxygen. I felt amazing. I'd come back, and then this opportunity, and I just went straight back into the gym. I never ever see out of camp like when I'm not fighting. I never ever just decide to go, oh, you know what, I'm going to have 10 Big Macs and 5 pizzas and just drink loads of beer. That's not my lifestyle. My lifestyle is, I thought I love this. I've not got a long shelf life in this world. I don't believe, I'm 31, I'll be 32 next month, and I don't believe that I see myself fighting or taking the damage that I'm taking just now in my later life. I can't justify it. I'm not an idiot, and I know the damage, and I know what it can do to you later on in life. So I want to get as many fights as I possibly can. This would be, if you look at a full year, this would be my 5th fight. So starting for Australia at the end of last year to now fighting again in November, 5 fights. So it's fun.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing, man. It's a very active streak you're on for sure. Like, and you know, I just get the feeling that, you know, people kind of ham it up. Before you fight, like, I feel like nearly every fight you've had, people are going, oh, if he loses this one, and you're like, he's even in the UFC, or else, you know, like, he has a pretty even record here, guys. You know, I feel like nearly every fight you have, people are kind of talking like that, and sometimes it's just not accurate. Do you get that sense?
Yep.
Like, is there a constant insecurity for you, or is that just people talking? Like, do you just say, all right, leave them to that, I'll get on with my business?
No, I kind of believe that. You know, our sport's about entertainment. As much as it is about the martial arts, it's entertaining. You need to have an entertaining factor in this. You could be the best fighter in the world, and with no ring presence or no charisma, and you'll not do well in this sport. you need to have something. And I just feel like if you're not performing, you're not entertaining the fans, then there's an opportunity for the bosses to just say, listen, we'll see you later. You look at guys who have been released. You had, was it Henrique da Silva, who just signed, joined about the same time as me, the heavyweight Henrique.
Yes.
And he was released as well. You had guys like, was it Walt Harris, who couldn't arrange a contract and then obviously was out. For me, I want to fight in the UFC. That's what I want to do as a job. And I need to put on performances, and I think sometimes it opens me up because I need to go out there and have that win. And I can understand why people look at me and say, well, Paul Woolsey, this is him, he's gone, this is his last fight, this is his last contract, blah, blah, blah. And I like that. It gives me that spark, it gives me that attitude, it gives me that back against the wall, and I need to perform. And this is what this is going to give me. 2 week fight camp, going into the Lions Den, fighting against this legend, I feel like, right, I am the underdog. I need to rise above the occasion and get this done to show people that I can actually fight. I deserve to be in the UFC.
I've just got one final question. That's all great stuff, Paul. Thank you so much again. But I've just got one final question about your meeting with Bret Hart. You look so happy in that picture, man. Can you tell us about your meeting with the best there is, the best there was, and the best there ever will be?
I was just about to say that. You took words out of my mouth. You know, I felt like a wee boy because I grew up with a bigger brother and we used to watch the wrestling. And I always wanted to be a fighter. Like, I looked at this guy and he wasn't the biggest, but he was the best. And his charisma, everything went along, was amazing. And getting to meet him and him getting to sign, I felt like a bit of a child going up with a Funko Pop. It's like a plastic figure, and he was away signing it. Honestly, I'm 6'4" and I'm standing next to him, and I was all chuffed with myself. Both me and myself and my partner went, and we're both Bret Hart fans. It was just an amazing, and then he starts telling his stories, and he's not as sharp as he once was, but you know what? His story and his life is rich. It's amazing just to hear him. And obviously didn't talk about the Montreal Screwjob because he's sick of talking about that.
I'd say everybody asks him that. Yeah, straight away, I'd say it's the first question out of everyone's mouth at those Q&As.
Well, that's exactly. And the like sort of compiler was like, okay, guys, he's not taking any questions on the Montreal Screwjob, so don't bother asking. And one of the guys went up there and asked this question, and he's like, so... But he words it in such a way where he's like, so when you sort of reformed the Hart Foundation and then all that stuff happened, can you tell me about all that stuff that happened? And he's like, you want to hear about the Screwjob, don't you? And he's like, yeah. And he's like, I'm not going to do it. So it's like everybody wants to hear it, but he must be sick of just talking about that. But for me, this, like, I love this sport so much because it gives me the opportunity to meet these guys. And I talked to these guys about MMA, and like last year I got to meet JR, who's a massive MMA fan. I got to meet Chris Jericho, who isn't. He's like, I just don't get it. I just don't get it. And I'm like, well, it's like what you do, only it's real. And he's like, I know, but I just don't get it. And I, like for me, getting to meet my idols, like guys as a teenager and younger as a child that I grew up watching, I'm meeting them. Like, I got the opportunity to meet Biffy Clyro as well, and like, it's blowing my mind. And inside, like, I'm like screaming, like this inner child of mine is going like, Paul, you get to meet this guy. And outside, I'm trying to remain cool, but don't get me wrong, I'm sweating. Like, I've done 5 rounds with Bret Hart. I'm just constantly sweating with nerves. But this sport, it just gives you so much. It takes so much from me. It takes so much time, and like time I should be spending with my family, and I can't because, like, for instance, last night they had those fireworks displays that I couldn't take my kids to. I miss out on trick or treating with my kids because I've got to give this camp my all.
Absolutely, man. It's incredible. But that's a great story about you and Bret Hart. I better let some other media members talk to you because I know you're on a bit of a shift there in terms of media. But a pleasure to speak to you, and all the best to you, Brian, and the Scottish Hit Squad in Brazil, my friend. It's a huge fight, and I'm glad that you're finally getting one.
Thank you very much, my friend. Hopefully I'll speak to you after the fight and I'll be like, hey, getting dick as always.
That sounds good, man. I look forward to it. I'll talk to you soon, Paul.
Hey, man. I'll see you.
Bye-bye.
Hey, have a good weekend. I'll see you later.
You too, man. And thank you very much to Big Paul Craig, who I'm sure is being buoyed by his meeting with Bret Hart a couple of months ago. Amazing. No, he stepped away from that a couple of years ago. You keep it current, don't you, McGrath?
That's not a very bad question to ask, is it?
No, what are you missing? Let's have a look at that card, though. I mean, two big European interests in the main and co-main, with Jan Blachowicz taking on Ronaldo Souza, Mr. Jacare, as we call him in this neck of the woods. 205. How do you think Jacare is going to get on there? Do you feel like he can be a perennial title contender?
No.
Hasn't looked well for the likes of Chris Weidman, Luke Rockhold, who've all tried to do this recently.
The older nuts. They're struggling. They are. No, it is. I think, you know, Jacare has not impressed me in his last number of bouts, and I think maybe he is on that downward trajectory.
Trajectory.
In his career. And beautiful synergy here. And I think, yeah, it is. You know, it is Blachowicz's fight there to win. He's been on a roll recently. And I can't look past him. And I don't think a lot of people. I think, you know, if you look at the odds, it's going to be very much in Blachowicz's favour, because I know it's in Brazil, but I don't really care. I think that guy's overcome enough adversity to go out there and get a result against Jacare. And I do fancy him, I do, because I've been very impressed with some of his performances recently.
That's a good point, actually, because, I mean, if you think about the amount of people that were already booking Luke Rockhold v. John Jones before Blachowicz even fought him, like, I mean, they were writing him off, right? Like, so don't write him off, man. No, he has a left hook for you.
Don't write him off. He's a tough dude, and he can go, you know, and he's durable as well. Like, you know, he's not one of those guys that, you know, he gets tapped and he goes down. Like, look at what he did to fucking Chris Weidman, as you said there. Like, the guy has a lot of tools in his repertoire, and I just think Jacare is a fading force. And I think it's going to be very evident on Saturday night. I think Blachowicz is going to do this. I'm very, very confident he is.
Paul Craig gets to call up to fight Mauricio Rua, as we spoke to him about just there. A huge, huge opportunity for Paul Craig.
It's a massive fight. A legend
in Brazil. Like.
It's a massive fight. And it's just a tough one to read here, because, like, Paul, man, you know, again, in his last fight, pulling it out of the bag. But we've sort of, well, I've questioned Paul's maybe cardio in a number of his bouts, where he's sort of faded a little bit going in after the first round, even. And I think,
but he's so many third round finishes, it's hard to say, right?
It's mad.
It's bizarre.
It is, but very bizarre. He seems to come to life right at the death when it needs it the most. And that's a great thing to have in your locker, to know you're able to do that.
But last time, we made quick work of Anisha's, obviously.
That's right. But like, Shogun, like, yeah. Like, what are we going to see from Shogun? You never know what you're going to see from him anymore. You know, it's so erratic. He hasn't been the same fighter for the last 3 or 4 years. It's Paul Craig's fight probably to lose. Is that a fair comment to say? I don't think it is it?
I don't know. Like, it's hard, like, because it's a big step up, man. Because as Paul said in the interview, like, he's going from fighting these debuting pros to fighting, like, this legend of the game. They have an opponent they both face in Tyson Pedro. Yeah. Obviously, Shogun's still putting Tyson away in his last fight there last December. But it's been a long time since we saw him. I mean, the last time I saw him fight live was against Anthony Smith in Hamburg. But, I mean, a year is a long time when you're 37 years of age, right?
Yeah, I don't know what we really expect to see from him anymore. And I'm not sure we're going to see a very, very good version of Shogun. And I think the interesting thing here is Paul Craig going in going into Brazil as well. That's going to be an interesting dynamic to see if he can adjust. And, you know, the Brazilian crowds are lethal, guys, especially like when you're fighting a guy like Shogun or Jacare. It's going to be tough for those guys. But I'm going to favour Paul Craig here.
Yeah, well, it will be quite a win. I'm looking forward to watching that one. Charles Oliveira also on this card.
That's a banging fight.
I know he's not a European man, but what a run he's on. I mean, 5 wins. What does a win against Jared Gordon do for him, though? You know, like, I mean,
you're right. Jared Gordon's coming off 2 losses. One sort of big knockout there recently. Lost quite badly. So I actually would have liked seeing Jared Gordon take a little bit more time off. Because he's coming off a win. It was the bad knockout. It was against Joaquin Silva, and the one before that against Diego Ferreira. But yeah, I'm not sure really what it does. Jared's a very good fighter. Rough, tough, and really good stand up. Obviously coming out of Rufus Sport as well. But yeah, you'd have to fancy Oliveira here, man. The guy has serious skills. I think he's just getting better and better and better the whole time. I think ever since that Paul Felder fight, we've seen so much evolution in his game, his stand up, his Muay Thai, how good he is in the deck. The guy's insane. But again, you're coming back to it. What does it really do for him? I don't know. I just think it keeps him there. I think he does as well. And I think maybe because it's a Brazilian card, he just wanted to get a fight in. And he has been quite vocal about it as well, saying he wants higher level opponents.
The ghost of Hannon Burrell's on this card.
Jesus.
There he is.
Didn't even realise. There we go.
There's a lot of good fights, but let's keep it European.
Yeah, of course.
Of course, Arian Lipsky, the former KSW champion, has been having a hard time of it in the UFC.
It's
actually quite shocking to me.
It is shocking. And this is a make it or break it fight, I feel, for Ariane. She's underperformed, I think, in both her outings. Looked very, very, and I think we mentioned this on both her fights against Calderwood and McCann. Nerves seem to be very, very evident.
Molly mopped the floor with her in the last one.
Yeah. Like mopped the floor with her. But nerves did. She just looked very, very edgy coming into those fights. I noticed that. I thought it was quite evident. It's going to be interesting to see, because we know what she can do. We've seen her in KSW. It's just a matter of, I think, maybe a home crowd as well might suit her. I know she's obviously, you know, Brazilian Polish, but I think the home crowd here could be a big, big advantage for her. Maybe settle her down, calm her down, and I'm expecting a big performance. I really am.
Well, I think if she doesn't win this one, it's over.
It's curtain.
So. Yeah, it's pretty important. Let's take a look at this Bellator 234 card. In Israel, Linton Vassell, UK light heavyweight even, is in the main event against Sergei Karatanov. That's a very tough fight for Linton. There's absolutely no doubt about that. Karatanov is a great heavyweight, probably one of the best heavyweights in the world. It doesn't really get the credit he deserves, as far as I'm concerned.
Fight every week as well.
Yeah, I mean, he comes into this on a 6-fight win streak. He's coming off the win against Matt Mitrione. Yeah. He's bet Roy Nelson. He's bet Joey Beltran. I mean, I don't fancy.
Linton,
even though Linton does carry a wallop, I feel like Sergei's is a bridge too far. Sinead Kavanagh on the card against Olga Rubin.
That's flown underneath the radar.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good fight. Obviously, Olga fought here in Dublin a number of months ago, and it's a big, big one.
Obviously, fought for the title already, Olga. So
I wonder if Sinead's all right. Like, she's, you know, obviously she suffered a couple of injuries after her last fight against Leslie Smith. I would have maybe seen her take a little bit more time off. But yeah, I think it's a big, big night for Sinead as well. She talked about that Leslie Smith rematch. It obviously never came to fruition, but it is. It's a big, big one night for Sinead Kavanagh as well.
She should call for that fight if she gets the
win.
That would
100%,
be huge.
Definitely.
Austin Vanderford, Mr. Van Zandt, is also on that card. And about 75 lads from Israel. So enjoy them prelims.
That should be fun.
Also going down this week is Brave, because obviously the World Championships is being held in Bahrain this week, and a big event for Brave there, with Jose Torres defending his flyweight title against Marcel Oder at the top of the card. Also involved, as I broke that a few weeks ago, is Ryan Curtis v. Amir Albazi. But on the prelims, what?
That picture of Ryan is beautiful. His hair looks great.
He's a very good looking man. What about the 135 meeting between Dean Garnett and Rani Sada? That's like second from the bottom.
That's
like,
crazy.
Please tell me this isn't the bout order, because it's ridiculous.
Like,
if
that should be co-main event.
Dean Garnett and Rani Sada is an incredibly high level fight.
That's a banger, man. That is an absolute banger of a scrap. That should be co-main event.
Can we reshuffle this for you, right? Keep Jose where he is.
Yeah, Grant.
Then put Dean Garnett v. Rana in co-main event. Then keep Felipe Silva and Guram there, maybe. But then I want to see Ryan Curtis v. Amir Albazi.
Yeah.
Who do I send my invoice to?
Prince of Bahrain. You get a good invoice out of him, eh?
50 million.
Yeah, there you go.
But, I mean, jeez, that's pretty.
I'll watch it. It's actually not a bad card.
I'm going to try and watch it. Yeah. Hopefully, I'll get a word with Ryan before he heads off. But, best of luck to the Irish fighters competing at the Worlds in Bahrain this week, right? Is it the Worlds? It's the Worlds,
yeah. It's the Worlds, yeah. Well, no, it's a big week, and obviously. A big, strong bucket of fighters there. So, yeah, I'm very much looking forward to seeing what other future stars we can produce from this. And obviously Andy and all the lads there and him are doing a great job of getting the team together. And
I think
prepared.
Paddy Ewan's gone over to coach, because he was at that Cage Warriors event and he literally watched his two amateurs fight. And then I think he was home to get a plane to Bahrain. So, pretty incredible.
That's it, yeah. So, you know, best of luck to these up-and-coming future stars of mixed martial arts.
I wonder if he's booked a date at the Easton's in Bahrain to plug his book.
I'd say so.
Yeah, I think that goes without saying.
Yeah, he's probably invited to the Prince's castle or whatever they do there.
Charge him 50 million for a book, right?
I wouldn't be going to any Prince's castle in Bahrain, but anyway.
All right. Don't think, just for the record, we don't know if Paddy is either.
Yeah, we don't have we're just totally waffling shit here.
Yeah. So when are we going to get a definitive answer to the doorbell gate? Are you going to stay in the trees?
Follow my social media. I'll give an update later on. There was a bit of interest last night. What are people doing at 4:30 in the morning? Bloody
there's
tweeting
a bit
me back.
Of interest last night.
Yeah. So I'll give an update later on. But yeah, I think I'm sort of it's a bit embarrassing, really, because I was so angry And then I thought it was someone. I was swinging the golf club. Like, my nine iron was getting wrapped off the bloody wall out the front. And then I think it might have been a technical fault. So, that's quite embarrassing for me. But listen, fuck it, shit happens.
These things happen.
Yeah, these things happen in MMA. I'm looking forward to this weekend because we've loads more MMA to watch. I hate it.
I can't wait till I'm a Celebrity Gets Me Out of Here starts, so keep tabs on one of the
mental.
The hottest new signings in MMA.
That's crazy, man. I think that's just... It's just bizarre that they're going to sign a guy and then, you know...
Like, somebody asked you from the MMA fans' reaction to this. Me pointing out that he did say he was professionally dedicated to MMA.
Yeah.
All this professional dedication. And everyone's like, yeah, it's a good thing. It's going to drive up his money. That isn't... Like, imagine he was playing football and this is what we're saying. Oh, sorry, lads. He's actually going to go and do a reality TV show for a while. It's ridiculous.
I can understand it to a certain extent, but it does take away his real commitment.
Well,
to
it takes away
the whole
illusion that he was doing this for passion, etc. Like,
Bellator love this kind of thing, and they haven't been very successful with it.
Well, Aaron Chalmers,
Aaron was
successful.
Yeah, but you know, in general, a lot of the stuff they've done hasn't been very successful in getting eyes back to their broadcast. I would imagine. So, I think that is really what Bellator need to do, and I think they need to come up with some new, more tactics and make better fights. And maybe, you know, as we have with Cage Warriors, and we say with Cage Warriors, there's a greater goal. I think that's what Bellator need to establish. And
yeah, I've said that. Make European titles, and they're like, we don't want to make the main titles.
I'm actually coming around to it now.
What are we fighting for?
Because
at the end
it's just getting very stale.
Yeah.
But yeah, what about Tyson Fury and Darren Till training as well?
Yeah. I stuck a picture up of that there today.
And Stipe Miocic coming out and deleting his tweet and all that. Did you see that?
What was that?
He said, "Be careful what you wish for." Cleveland's finest, man.
I mean, right, like when he said this in the interview, I'm like, alright, this is just a bit of crack, fair play to him.
Yeah, reach out to Darren again, so we'll hopefully get him on in 6 months.
Alright. But when I saw the initial interview about Tyson, I was like, right, he's just having a bit of crack. Like, no matter what you want to say, if he's gone and having a session with Darren Till, it does add something to that, to storyline, you know what I mean?
Yeah, but it's not like...
Do I think it's going to happen? No.
I think it's more realistic of happening than maybe some of the other stuff we've seen in the past. Like, clearly Dana's coming out and saying as well that, you know, oh, what's he doing coming to MMA? I love the guy, but he'll get handed. Yeah, that's Dana fucking trying to...
Yeah, well, they're owned by a PR company now, so
exactly.
I mean...
But listen, you know, there's been worse guys coming over, and a lot of, like, MMA in the heavyweight division does stay in the feet, so... You never know,
give
man.
Give Greg Hardy.
You never know. Yeah, well, there you go. Give him Greg. Be a bit of crack, won't it?
Yeah, I don't think it will ever happen, but
Greg
it's a bit of crack.
Greg will poke his eyes out or something. Or
I can't wait till Darren Till comes out and tells us that he's going to beat Stipe if they fight, etc. That's going to be magic.
That's going to be amazing.
That's the quote that we're going to get on this show.
He's moving to heavyweight. And,
that's the only question now. Darren,
are you
will Tyson Fury beat Stipe Miocic when they fight in the UFC?
Yoel Romero was mentioned as well. I thought he seemed to be smacking that out in his Instagram during the weekend. Darren Till said he wanted to fight Yoel.
Yeah, but sure. Israel and Yoel are fighting now.
Yeah. What I'm saying, that's Darren was just calling for it. I don't know.
I preferred the funny lines where he was like, oh, I'm shitting myself about it.
Oh, that means fucking hell. But no, listen. That's going to be interesting as well when we hear from Darren, if we ever do again, because he's such a... He even admits it. He's a nightmare to get a hold of. Like.
Yeah, he is indeed. But look, I'm very tired. I need to go.
Yeah, and he's got a bed for an hour.
So we'll see you next week. Thank you very much. And let us know what you think about our cafe backdrop.
Ended a bit better. It's a bit miserable.
You fucking ended it.
All right, okay. We'll catch you all next week. Sorry for grumpy Petey. Leave yous and love yous.
Wow, what an ending.
Yeah. Peter Carroll, and I'm a grad. Good luck. Good night.
So good at this.
Just end it, will you? Come on.
Bye bye.